Tasmania has gone from having some of the worst criminal laws in Australia in terms of discrimination against gay men to having some of the best.
His 1981 collaboration on Arthur's theme won both a Grammy and an Oscar. When my baby smiles at me, I'm going to Rio.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Chechen genocide continues amid denials and denunciations. 27 young gay men arrested in a community center raid in Bangladesh. And the 20th anniversary of Tasmania's triumph teaches timely tactics. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending May 20th, 2017. There were no signs this week that authorities had started to clamp down on the previously announced effort of the Russian region's president, Ramzan Kadyrov, to exterminate gay and bisexual men in Chechnya, or those perceived to be, by the time Islam's holiest observance of Ramadan begins at the end of May. The mostly Muslim region of Russia enjoys a certain degree of autonomy, but it's still part of the Russian Federation, so the buck stops with Vladimir Putin. Multiple independent press accounts confirm the roundup, internment, and torture in at least six gay concentration camps of more than 300 gay and bisexual men. They're beaten, starved, and tortured until they provide the names of all of their gay friends. At least 30 men have died, either during torture or at the hands of their shamed relatives, after authorities outed them to their families. Putin said last week that he'd ask for an investigation into what he referred to as rumors of the ongoing pogrom, but there's been no further word or perceptible action since then.
Chechnya's interior minister, Ruslan Alkhanov, claimed this week in an interview with the Russian news agency Interfax that, after an internal investigation, no objective evidence was found to substantiate the information disseminated in the media. He said police officials had received no complaints from alleged victims and hinted that his government might sue Novaya Gazeta, the independent Russian newspaper that first broke the story, for making baseless and frivolous claims. Dozens of demonstrations protesting those frivolous claims have been held around the world. About 1,000 people in the Australian cities of Melbourne and Hobart held candlelight vigils this week to protest the gay genocide.
Three French LGBTQ rights groups filed a complaint this week at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, charging Chechnya with committing genocide against gay people. The filing accuses President Ramzan Kadyrov and regional officials of conducting a wave of persecution, and specifically cites the widely reported honor killing of a gay teenager being thrown off a nine-story balcony by his uncle after authorities outed him to his family. The French groups are asking the International Criminal Court to begin work on the case immediately. Russia previously announced that it was officially withdrawing from the court's jurisdiction in November.
The European Parliament this week formally called for an immediate, independent, objective, and thorough investigation by Russia into the persecution of gay men in Chechnya. Openly gay Labour Party MEP Seb Dance represents the London region. He offered words of hope to oppressed LGBTQ people everywhere.
I'm a gay man, and I'm able to be here with other gay men, other lesbians, other LGBTI people, and do the work that we do, because I know I'm not going to be dragged from my seat by the authorities. I know I'm not going to be beaten up by the canal and left for dead, and then that be denied by the police and indeed by my own government. They're here to protect me. And I don't know if there's anybody watching in Chechnya or in Russia. You are not the problem if you're LGBTI. You are not the illness. It is the people who are doing this to you. They are the problem. And it is this organization, the international community, who will stand to defend you.
That was British member of the European Parliament, Seb Dance.
The former Soviet satellite of Lithuania announced this week that it was granting asylum to two Chechen men fleeing the anti-gay purge. Foreign Minister Linas Linkevičius of the tiny Baltic nation told the BBC that the decision was an implicit message to Russia because we are taking care of Russian citizens whose rights were abused. The Russian LGBT network said this week that it's now helped to evacuate 43 gay and bisexual men from Chechnya. Spokeswoman Svetlana Zakharova told BuzzFeed News that many are having trouble securing visas that will allow them to leave the country, and a handful, she said, have fled without visas because they believe the danger of remaining in Chechnya was too great. Dozens remain in hiding in Russia, she added, as sensitive negotiations continue with four other countries to join Lithuania in accepting gay Chechen refugees. She didn't want to name the countries, but said that two of them are outside the European Union. According to the Russian LGBT network, however, the United States is rejecting visa requests from Chechen refugees. In response to that report, a U.S. State Department spokesperson told BuzzFeed only that the department could not comment on visa denials because they are confidential under U.S. law, so we are unable to discuss individual cases.
In other news from another unfriendly part of the world, 27 men were arrested this week at a gay social gathering in Bangladesh. An elite police unit detained the men in the early morning hours of May 19th in a raid on a community center just outside the nation's capital, Dhaka. The informal group reportedly met there every 2 months, most staying overnight. Authorities said the suspects were primarily students in their 20s who had traveled to the community center from across the country. They allegedly had drugs and condoms in their possession. Police said the 27 might not face charges of homosexuality, which is punishable by life in prison, because they were taken into custody before they could engage in sexual activity, but they could still be charged with serious drug offenses. Homosexual relations are illegal in Muslim-majority Bangladesh under a rarely enforced British colonial-era law, but LGBTQ people are frequent targets of abuse and discrimination. Two activists were brutally murdered in Dhaka last year by machete-wielding jihadists.
Two young men in their early 20s in the Sharia-governed Indonesian province of Aceh were sentenced this week to 85 lashes for engaging in private consensual adult same-gender lovemaking. Suspicious religious vigilantes had broken into their rented room to catch them in the act. While most Indonesians practice a moderate form of Islam, the federal government allows Aceh to be ruled by strict Islamic law, which punishes such morality offenses with painful and humiliating public canings. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch are among the global advocacy groups to condemn the sentences and to call for the young men's immediate release. An Amnesty statement said that every human being has a right to privacy, a right to enter consensual relations, and a right to physical protection. A court official said that the men would be caned before Ramadan begins at the end of May.
The May 17th sentencing of the two young Indonesian men ironically coincide with the annual International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, or IDAHOT. Dozens of observances on that day, ranging from vigils and rallies to pride events, focused global attention on the persecution of LGBTQ people. Rainbow flags flew over the Dutch and British embassies in Beirut to coincide with a week-long LGBTQ pride festival, the first in Lebanon, that had to be truncated because of security threats. Rainbow flags also flew for the first time over government buildings in Nepal. Lithuanian officials in the capital city of Vilnius lit up City Hall in rainbow colors. But thugs attacked an IDAHOT rally in the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv and set fire to a rainbow flag. Two police officers were hospitalized after trying to disperse the crowd of about 30 assailants in the center of the country's second-largest city. There were four arrests. According to the European branch of the worldwide LGBTQ advocacy group ILGA, private consensual adult same-gender sex remains a crime in 72 countries. That's nevertheless an improvement from the 96 countries the group counted in 2002. However, eight United Nations member states, including Saudi Arabia, Iran, Yemen, and Sudan, still punish same-gender sex with execution.
But finally, equality advocates, at least many of them, celebrated the May 17th release of transgender U.S. Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning after she served more than 7 years in the male barracks at the military prison in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Some have hailed her as a hero for engineering the largest breach of secret government documents in U.S. history when, as an intelligence analyst, she sent confidential communiques, videos, and other material to WikiLeaks exposing U.S. military malfeasance in Iraq. She is condemned as a traitor for those actions by others. Manning, known as Bradley before coming out as transgender soon after her imprisonment, was originally sentenced to 35 years, but her sentence was commuted by Barack Obama in one of his final acts as president late last year.
Chelsea Manning was still the longest-serving whistleblower in U.S. history. She spent much of that time in solitary confinement, during which she tried committing suicide twice, and much of her energy trying to get proper care for her gender dysphoria. She remains on active duty without pay, but is eligible for continued health care, including the trans-related treatment she was finally granted in prison in 2015, along with access to commissaries and military exchanges. Her attorneys are still appealing the original conviction. Manning released a new photo of herself the day after her release, the first to show her as a woman. "Okay," she wrote on Instagram, "here I am, everyone." She's wearing a low-cut, open-topped black and white ensemble, set off by a slash of bright coral lipstick. Her blonde hair is short, a male grooming standard that was imposed on her throughout her incarceration. Manning's release was celebrated in at least 9 countries, ranging from a toast to freedom at a bar in Newton, New Zealand, a vigil in London's Trafalgar Square, and a large portrait of her, until this week only an artist's rendition of her as a woman, posted by activists in Berlin, to a rally at Harvey Milk Plaza in San Francisco, and a concert dedicated to her by peace activist Yonatan Shapira in Beersheba, Israel.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 20th, 2017, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
After waiting for weeks and weeks for the parliamentary process to finally conclude, we had this wonderful outcome, and many of us started to cry tears of joy and tears of relief.
But there's more to this special Australian anniversary than charming memories later in the program. Right now, we've got a minute, a rainbow one, for another charming Aussie.
When my baby smiles at me, I'm going to Rio.
Aussie icon Peter Allen, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Renowned Australian songwriter and energetic concert performer, Peter Allen was born in 1944. In 1959, he and singer Chris Ball formed the Allen Brothers, playing rock and roll on TV and in clubs. While on tour, Allen met Judy Garland and later married her daughter, Liza Minnelli. That marriage would last 3 years. Allen wrote "I Honestly Love You" for Olivia Newton-John and "Don't Cry Out Loud" for Melissa Manchester. His 1981 collaboration on Arthur's theme won both a Grammy and an Oscar. Allen wrote his signature song, "I Go to Rio," with Angry Anderson. Allen fell in love with Gregory Connell, who helped shape his flamboyant public persona, encouraging him to wear Hawaiian shirts on stage. Both lives were cut short by AIDS. In 2003, Allen's life and music were celebrated in the Broadway musical, The Boy from Oz. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John Porter.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Now available on CD or by download.
Attention all LGBT, U.S. history buffs, collectors, and listener supporters.
You can now own a very special edition of This Way Out.
Here's a taste.
Today, being gay is not a crime.
This is going to lead to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Children born today will grow up in a world without DOMA.
This is social engineering by a court.
Is this Jim?
Yes, it is, Mr. President.
Congratulations.
Today, some of the darkest 24 hours in our nation's history.
It's the day I finally get to look at the man that I love and finally say, will you please marry me?
From outlaws to in-laws traces the legal evolution of the U.S. Supreme Court.
from the decriminalization of private consensual adult gay sex in 2003 to making marriage equality the law of the land in 2015.
This special edition features the voices of dozens of equality advocates over those years who made the journey possible.
Despite always outspoken opposition along the way.
From Outlaws to In-Laws also includes a wide variety of thematic music.
You'll find all the info you need about this very special edition of This Way Out at
thiswayout.org.
Well, isn't that special?
It took an impressive 12-year struggle that brought campaigners to the street, the Australian High Court, and even the United Nations. This month, the state of Tasmania is celebrating the 20th anniversary of the repeal of its law against gay male sex, which had been the most severe and the last surviving sodomy law in the country. Veteran activist Rodney Croom sees many lessons from 1997 that are still applicable in 2017 that we'll consider later. But first, let's hear how Croom talked about the great victory at the time in a phone conversation with This Way Out correspondent Greg Redding.
On Thursday, the 1st of May, at 5 p.m., the Tasmanian Upper House passed the Gay Law Reform Bill without any amendments whatsoever, which means that Tasmania has gone from having some of the worst criminal laws in Australia in terms of discrimination against gay men to having some of the best. We now have an equal age of consent, no promotion and encouragement laws, nothing like that. All we have is perfect equality before the law.
Did you feel it was touch and go at any time there with those various amendments which they were arguing for?
Yes, it was. We didn't know until right at the end whether the bill was going to get through unamended or whether it was going to be wrecked by these discriminatory amendments. Of course, the problem wasn't just getting bad amendments. The problem was that if any of those amendments had got up, the bill would have been wrecked because none of those amendments would have been acceptable to the lower house. And we would have had to wait another 12 months for the bill to come up again. But as it happened, none of that occurred, and we got the best bill, the more than we could have hoped for, really.
Why did you get stirred up in the very first place, Rodney?
Why did I get involved? Well, there have been quite a few people who have been involved in the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group from the beginning, not just me. But I guess I've taken on a high public profile over the issue. And that's really something that was set at the beginning of our campaign when there was hardly anyone, well, there was no one, in fact, who was willing to be public on the issue. There was a great deal of invisibility and repression of homosexual people in Tasmania. And I guess I was just the least unwilling of everyone involved at that stage to go public. It was still a difficult decision for me to make, but I decided I'd do it where no one else seemed to want to do it. And I've just kept on going since then.
Did you ever feel like giving up?
No, I've never felt like giving up. From the mainland, what you see really is the Tasmanian Upper House rejecting law reform again and again, and then finally on May the 1st passing it. But the perspective down here is quite different. It hasn't been one of constant losses and then a victory in the end. We've had constant victories all the way along. Victories which have chiefly been constituted by an increase in public support for gay law reform, an increase in institutional support as well, throughout that nine-year period, to an extent where I think Tasmania could now be said to be one of the most tolerant places in the country when it comes to gay men and lesbians. And that's been because of the gay law reform campaign, a campaign which has been very high profile, very visible, and which has reached into the hearts and minds of every Tasmanian. Every single person in this state has had to sit up and think about where they stand on this issue. And that's something that occurs very infrequently in communities in the Western world, where people can just sit back and ignore issues such as this if they wish to, but not in Tasmania. It's been too divisive, too heated, too high profile, and the result has been that a very large number of people indeed have come to the conclusion that gay men and lesbians deserve equality.
You have had, though, right up until the end, a very vocal opposition within the general community. Why do you think that was particularly the case?
Well, people have written reams and reams on why there's such a vocal and militant homophobic movement in Tasmanian society, and people have come up with all number of different explanations. Some have focused on our history, particularly our 19th century history, with the association between convictism and homosexuality, and how that association still scares members of the Tasmanian establishment who don't want to unearth the dark side of our history. Other people have looked at the way that the state's economy has been floundering and the transition that we've been making very painfully over the last 15 years from an industrial base based on hydroelectric power to clean green, so-called clean green industries. And that's caused a lot of heartache for a lot of people, and people have concentrated on that as an explanation. That is that people have taken out their tensions and frustrations on this issue. Whatever the explanation is, it has been a very heated and divisive issue, and the anti-gay lobby has been very militant. But at the very end, when the last vote was taken, there was actually only one member of the upper house who voted against it. All the others realised the game was up, and they just gave up and sat back and let it go through, which was something that was utterly astounding for us, given that they'd fought so hard for so long to keep those laws.
Tell us about the reaction that night.
Well, like I said, it was a very tense day. The supporters of reform had managed to make sure that there was a majority on our side all the way through, but members kept swapping over. I guess they wanted to maintain some level of anti-gay credibility by voting against us on at least one vote. So it was very tense. We didn't know if we were going to get it or not, right up until the last vote. So our first reaction was one of relief. After waiting for weeks and weeks for the parliamentary process to finally conclude, we had this wonderful outcome. And many of us started to cry, tears of joy and tears of relief. And then that evening, once it had begun to sink in what had actually happened, there was a spontaneous gathering at a cafe in Hobart called Cafe Chaos, about 150 people, mostly gay men and lesbians. And the feeling there was electric. This had finally happened. It had finally gone through. We were equal. It was absolutely wonderful. And then throughout the weekend, there were more celebrations. And there were still many people who were in shock. I had people coming up to me and saying, it's really happened, hasn't it? They can't change it, can they? They can't go back on what they did. It's done, isn't it? They couldn't believe that it actually happened after so long. They couldn't believe that the victory was so conclusive.
So what's ahead now for the gay and lesbian community in Tasmania?
Well, at a legislative level, in terms of legal rights, we'll be focusing a lot of energy on anti-discrimination. Tasmania is the only state without a broad-based anti-discrimination act, and we will be supporting moves to change that. There are bills before the parliament at the moment which would prohibit discrimination and vilification on the grounds of sexual orientation. And we're hoping that with the upper house's newfound support for the principles of non-discrimination, that they'll pass that. We'll also be looking now at relationship recognition. In particular, what kind of relationship recognition people in this state want. There's quite a bit of disquiet about having our relationships recognised on the same basis as heterosexual de facto couples, and people are keen to look at other options. So we'll be looking at that as well. At a broader social and cultural level, I think what we'll be seeing in Tasmania is a bit of a flowering of gay and lesbian culture. Certainly the law reform debate has seen a lot of cultural as well as political work occurring in Tasmania around gay and lesbian issues, but hopefully we'll see even more of that. Obviously we'd be encouraging gay and lesbian people who have left the state to come back, and encouraging visitors who have been boycotting Tasmania to come now as well.
And what's ahead for yourself, Rodney?
Well, I'll still be interested and involved in gay and lesbian rights issues, but I'd like to take a back seat because I've been fairly high profile up until now. And on issues like anti-discrimination, I'm happy to do some background work, but I'd be keen to encourage other people to take on the advocacy roles and not myself. I find it difficult being recognised in the street, and it happens a fair bit. Not that it's ever negative. People are very supportive, particularly at the moment, full of congratulations. But still, I'd like to go back to being slightly less high profile and see if I can recapture a bit of anonymity.
Congratulations, and thank you for your work over the years and the rest of the team.
Thank you very much. We couldn't have done it without you.
The predictions Tasmanian activist Rodney Croom shared with correspondent Greg Redding when Australia's last sodomy law was repealed have largely come true, with the possible exception of marriage equality and Croom's retirement. He wrote a piece in recognition of this year's 20th anniversary of the repeal for the LGBTQI Sydney Star Observer, highlighting 10 lessons from the campaign that has by now made Tasmania arguably the most queer-friendly state in the country, lessons Croom believes could finally win nationwide marriage equality. Those lessons include a nonpartisan, multi-level approach, the use of civil disobedience, and an attitude of forbearance and forgiveness in appeals to people on a grassroots level.
We're gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back. We're gonna keep on walking proudly. Keep on walking proudly. Keep on walking proudly. Never turning back. Never turning back. We're gonna keep on singing loudly. Keep on singing loudly.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, Sarah Sweeney, Michael LeBeau, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with John Porter contributed program material, with 20th anniversary thanks to Greg Redding and, as always, to Steve Pride. Peter Allen and Judy Small performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. It's always a good time to log on to thiswayout.org and join the family. Look for This Way Out on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KEUL Girdwood and Hope, Alaska, 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all stay tuned.